Welcome to the deep dive. This is where we take your source material, you know, the articles, the research, the notes you've shared, and really dig in to find the most important insights.
Yeah, we're here to help you get up to speed quickly, figure out what really matters, and maybe hopefully trigger a few aha moments.
Think of it as a shortcut to being well-informed on something specific, guided by us having wrestled with the material beforehand.
Exactly. And today, wow, we are diving into a really fascinating piece of research. It's a PhD dissertation looking at, well, a new kind of programming language needed for these emerging mobile apps.
That's right. Our mission today is to unpack the vision behind these apps, understand the challenges, and there were pretty significant challenges for developers using, you know, the old tools.
And then explore this really clever programming language approach that was designed specifically to make building these things, well, easier.
Okay, let's set the scene. The source talks about this big shift, right? Moving away from the classic desktop PC towards pervasive computing, devices everywhere. Smartphones, tablets, maybe even like everyday objects.
And the driver for this, it's the absolute explosion of sensors on these devices. GPS, accelerometers, gyroscopes, proximity sensors, NFC, you name it.
These devices are suddenly becoming much more aware of their physical surroundings.
Exactly. And that changes the whole interaction model, doesn't it? We move from you explicitly tapping an icon.
Right. User-initiated stuff.
To context-driven interactions. The device senses something where you are, maybe how fast you're moving, and then it decides what to do, what information to show you.
This enables what the dissertation calls reactive context-aware applications. Bit of a mouthful, but the idea is key.
Yeah, apps that are constantly sensing, adapting their behavior really quickly, promptly, as the source says, and critically, they're built with the understanding that they could be interrupted at any moment because the context just changed again.
So you've got the hardware, the sensors are there, this dynamic world is possible.
But the software side, that's the problem the research flags.
Right. The standard ways of building apps, the sort of app model we're used to, it's all based on the user doing something first. It just wasn't built for this constant flux and setter interruption.
Yeah, the software tools were definitely lagging behind what the hardware could actually do, trying to build these truly reactive, interruptible apps with standard methods. Incredibly hard. Error prone, too.
Okay, so to make this less abstract, the dissertation uses this fantastic detailed scenario. It takes us to Kampala, Uganda, and introduces a public transport company, Bainamuji Star, equipping its buses and minibuses with these advanced digital platforms running applications called Bainamuji Stars.
Right, Bainamuji Star. So they put screens and computers on the buses, but it's way more than just a display.
Oh, yeah. It runs these Bainamuchis that react in real time. What's the bus's location? Are other buses nearby? Passengers? What's the next stop? Even who is on the bus? Maybe using RFID tags?
It's a super context-rich environment. And the apps themselves really paint the picture. You've got Baino Info, the default one.
Yeah.
Shows a map, weather, nearby points of interest, like fuel stations.
So like a smart info screen that knows where it is right now. Then there's Baino Stickies, a kind of digital bulletin board.
Exactly. Messages or ads can pop up, maybe even take over the screen, and they can be targeted based on location or even the estimated age group of the passengers currently on board.
Wow. Okay. What else?
Baino Stop. This was really neat. It only appears when the bus is actually approaching a stop and shows timetable info. And it uses these things called bronze stops.
Bronze stops.
Yeah, basically just simple poles with cheap RFID tags. The bus reads the tag. The cool part is communities could create or move these stops just by putting up a tagged poster. Sort of crowdsourcing infrastructure.
That is brilliant. Simple tech for complex context. Keep going.
Okay, there's Beta Crime Spot visualizes crime trends. Maybe warns passengers if the bus enters an area flagged as unsafe recently.
Potentially very useful.
And Bino Katali. Detects nearby markets, shows food prices. And it's adaptive. If it detects a farmer is on board, maybe identified somehow,
yeah,
it might tweak the display to show prices more relevant to them.
Okay, these examples really highlight those core characteristics we talked about earlier, don't they?
Absolutely. You see, the context-constrained executions, Baino Stop only runs near a stop.
Right. And the prompt adaptability of Baino Katali changing for the farmer.
And crucially, that sudden interruptibility and resumption. Any of these apps might be running, doing something, and then boom, context changes, location changes, a new passenger group gets on, and this needs to pause, maybe stop, maybe resume later.
And that's where the software engineering headache really starts, isn't it? Trying to build these things with standard tools.
Exactly. Imagine trying to code that kind of behavior. How do you manage all that incoming context data? How do you make sure a piece of code that starts running because, say, you're near a market, actually stops running cleanly if the bus drives away mid-execution?
Yeah, how do you guarantee it stays constrained? And how do you make it adapt instantly?
And what about saving the state? If Baino Katali is halfway through fetching prices when the bus leaves the market zone, you need to save exactly where it was.
So it can pick up later if you come back.
Right, if the context becomes relevant again. And then there's the shared data problem, keeping the execution environment consistent.
Ah, the Calenda calendar example they used was great for this. Explain that again.
Okay, so imagine you have a calendar app, Calenda. Maybe Baino Info is running, displaying something. It gets interrupted because, say, Baino Katali needs to run. While Baino Katali is running, it changes the system's display language setting.
Right.
Now, when Baino Info eventually resumes, what language should it see? The new one Baino Katali set, or the language it was using before it got interrupted?
For predictable behavior, you'd often want it to resume in its original state, right? Otherwise, things could get really weird.
Exactly. Managing that kind of state visibility across interruptions is, well, a nightmare with standard techniques.
And this is the core argument in the research, isn't it? That you need a solution baked into the programming language itself.
Precisely. This isn't something you can easily fix with just libraries or frameworks. The need to potentially interrupt code anywhere, automatically, based on external context, that requires deep language support.
So the research lays out these six key requirements for a programming language that could handle this. R.1 through R.6.
Yeah, things like chained context reactions, context-dependent interruptions, resumptions, contextual and reactive dispatch, and that tricky state thing, reactive scope management.
And they looked at existing approaches, context-oriented programming, functional reactive programming.
Uh-huh. And even basic stuff like continuations, coroutines, threads. They did a thorough review.
And the conclusion?
None of them quite nailed all six requirements together. Not in a way that makes it easy and reliable for developers.
What were the shortcomings, like for context-oriented programming?
Existing COP often didn't quite have the reactive dispatch part, or struggled to guarantee that context constraint throughout the whole execution, not just when it started.
And functional reactive programming, good for data flow, but maybe not the interrupt.
Yeah, FRP is great for propagating changes through data dependencies, but less focused on interrupting and resuming complex, potentially long-running procedural tasks, which is what these Baino homies needed.
And the standard techniques like continuations, the call-up thing, what was the problem there?
The fundamental issue, as the source points out, is that they force the developer to manually insert checks for context changes and code to save and restore the program state all over the place.
Because an interruption could happen literally anywhere.
Exactly. Between any two lines of code, potentially. So you'd have to sprinkle your code with, if context changed, then save everything boilerplate. It's just not practical or maintainable for unpredictable context shifts. Imagine doing that in every loop, every function call.
Okay, so that really sets the stage for needing something new, which brings us to the core idea they proposed, the Interruptible Context-Dependent Executions Model, iCode.
iCode, yes. And the big idea, the absolute key, is shifting that burden.
Offloading it from the poor developer.
Precisely. The language runtime itself takes responsibility for automatically managing the context constraints, handling the interruptions, figuring out the resumptions. All that complex, error-prone stuff happens under the hood.
So the developer gets to focus more on the application logic for each different context.
That's the goal. Focus on what the app should do in the car, what it should do near the market, not the fiddly mechanics of switching between them.
Okay, so how does iCode achieve this? What are the key pieces inside the model?
First up, predicated procedures. This hits requirement R.2, context-dependent interruptions. Your procedures, your blocks of code, aren't just code anymore. They have a predicate attached to condition about the context that must be true.
And the runtime checks this.
Constantly and implicitly. While the procedure is running, the runtime is monitoring that predicate. If the context changes and the predicate becomes false, bang, the runtime automatically interrupts the execution. No manual checks needed in the developer's code.
And they mentioned dynamic propagation. What's that?
It means the check isn't just at the entry point of the procedure. The requirement, the predicate, kind of follows the execution flow, even down into nested function calls. So an interruption can happen deep inside the code.
Wow, okay. That's powerful. How is context itself handled? Reactive values?
Exactly. Reactive values for R.1 enabling R.5. Context isn't just a static piece of data. It's represented by these reactive values, things like sensor readings or maybe higher level context derived from multiple sensors, like, am I driving?
And they react to change.
Automatically. When the underlying sensor data changes, the reactive value updates, and that can trigger recomputations. The language provides ways to create these CTX event and feed data into them. Update value.
And this implicit lifting idea.
Yeah, that's neat. It means you can often use regular functions that expect simple values with these reactive values. If you apply a function f to a reactive value rv, the result is a new reactive value that automatically updates whenever rv changes. This is how you build those chains of context reactions.
Got it. And this ties into dispatching too.
Yes, reactive dispatching, R4, RTOIT5. Because context is live and reactive, the system doesn't just pick the code to run once when things start. The choice is continuous. As context shifts, the runtime might automatically switch execution to a different piece of code, a different behavioral variation on the fly.
Okay, automatic switching. And the interruptions and resumptions themselves, R2, R.3, how does that work mechanically?
So interruptible and resumable executions. When a context predicate fails and an interruption happens, the developer can configure strategies. Suspend means pause the execution and save its current state. Abort means just stop it, discard the state.
Yeah, for coming back.
Similarly, when the context becomes valid again, you can choose resume, pick up exactly where you left off using the save state, or restart, just start that piece of code from the beginning again.
And the crucial part is the runtime handles the state saving and restoring.
Transparently. That's the magic. No manual culture juggling for the developer.
Okay, what about that tricky shared state problem? The Calenda language issue, or R.6, reactive scope management.
Addressed by scoped state changes. The model offers different ways changes made inside one of these context-dependent executions affect the rest of the system. There's the normal way. Immediate visibility changes are global straight away.
But there are other options.
Yes. Deferred visibility means changes are kept local until the execution finishes successfully. If it gets interrupted midway, the changes are thrown away. They only become global on successful completion.
And the key one, isolated visibility. How does that fix the Calenda problem?
With isolated visibility, any changes made inside the execution are completely local to that specific run. And crucially, they are discarded whether the execution is interrupted or R, even if it completes normally.
Ah.
So, back to Calenda. If Beinu Info changes the language setting but does so with isolated scope, that change only exists within that specific instance of Beinu Info running. If it gets interrupted, poof, the change is gone. If it resumes later, it uses whatever the current global or context-specific language setting is, not the temporary isolated one. Problem solved.
That is really elegant. It avoids those weird side effects completely.
It provides really strong guarantees about state consistency in these highly dynamic situations.
And could you make parts uninterruptible if needed?
Yes, there was a continuous construct to mark critical sections that absolutely must run to completion without being interrupted by context changes. Gives you that fine-grained control when necessary.
Okay, so that's the iCode model. Powerful ideas. How did they actually, you know, build this, test it out?
They created an experimental platform called iScheme.
iScheme. Like the Scheme programming language.
Exactly. They ported Scheme to run on iOS. And the key idea was what they called language symbiosis, with Objective-C, the native language of iOS back then.
Meaning the Scheme code could easily talk to and use all the native iOS stuff, sensors, GUI components, everything.
Precisely. You get the flexibility and dynamism of Scheme, but you're not cut off from the underlying platform's power. iScheme used an event-driven model, so Scheme procedures could act as handlers for sensor events, button taps, and so on.
And iScheme had other tricks up its sleeve. Something about distributed apps, AMOP.
Right. Ambient-oriented programming features were built in. This was about making it easier to build mobile apps that could talk to each other directly, peer-to-peer.
What kind of features are we talking about?
Things like service discovery using Bonjour so devices on the same Wi-Fi could find each other without needing a central server. Asynchronous messaging between devices over TCP/IP. And importantly, ways to handle failures gracefully. What happens if the network drops or another device disappears?
So constructs like export service when discovered.
Yeah, remote send to call a function on another device, when resolved to get the result back, doing for timeouts, catch for handling errors. They abstracted away a lot of the low-level networking complexity.
And they tested this with a game, AmbiScrabble.
They did. A distributed Scrabble-like game. It showed how players' devices could discover each other on the network, send messages to exchange letters using those remote send calls, and use things like Doin to handle players dropping off the network. It showcased the symbiosis, too, using native UI elements controlled by Scheme.
Okay, so iScheme is the foundation. Dynamic language on iOS, access to native features, built-in tools for distributed apps, and then they built Flute on top of this.
Exactly. Flute is the proof-of-concept language that actually implements the iCode model. It was built as a meta-interpreter running within iScheme, extending the Scheme language.
Got it. So Flute is where a developer would actually use things like predicated procedures and scoped state changes. What are the main language constructs in Flute?
The core ideas are modals and modes.
Modals and modes, okay.
Think of a modal as representing something, a variable, a procedure whose value or behavior changes depending on the context.
And a mode?
A mode is one specific version of that variable or behavior tied to a particular context. It has the actual code or value, and it's associated with the context predicate that activates it.
So a modal is like a container for all its different context-specific modes.
That's a good way to think about it. And Flute uses these to implement iCode. You can have variable modals.
Like the background color example.
Right. Big color could be a modal. It might have a mode for isOwner, context-yielding gray color, and another mode for not isOwner, yielding brown color. Or that contacts list variable modal in the Taseki app.
Which gives you business contacts in the car and coworker contacts in the conference room.
Exactly. The developer just asks for the value of contacts list, and the Flute runtime figures out the current context and automatically provides the value from the currently active mode.
That sounds much cleaner than writing I will false blocks everywhere you need the contacts.
Oh, absolutely. And then you have procedure modals. The implementation of a function changes based on context, like the calendar agenda modal having a show private agenda mode and a show public agenda mode.
Or the to call procedure in the Taseki task assistant example.
Perfect example. And crucially, when you define a mode in Flute, whether it's for a variable or a procedure, you specify not just the code or value and the context predicate.
But also those iCode configuration options, how to interrupt it, how to resume it, the state scoping.
Yes. Suspend or abort for interruption, resume or restart for resumption, immediate, deferred, or isolated for state visibility. That's all defined right there with the mode.
Okay, let's walk through Taseki again, but focusing on how Flute makes it work automatically.
Sounds good. So Taseki has the to-call procedure modal and the contacts list variable modal. Both are driven by the location reactive context source, which might tell us if we're in car or at conference room.
So user gets in the car, GPS updates, the location context becomes in car. What happens in Flute?
The Flute runtime sees the location context change. It looks at the to-call modal, finds the mode whose predicate is in car, let's call it the call from car mode, and starts executing it.
And if that call from car code needs the context list,
it just accesses the context list modal. The runtime, knowing the context is in car, automatically provides the value from the business context mode associated with in car.
Okay. Now the user arrives at work, walks into the conference room, location changes to at conference room.
Right. Flute runtime detects this immediately. It sees the in car. Predicate for the currently running call from car mode is now false.
So it interrupts it.
Automatically.
Yeah.
Based on how call from car was defined, let's say within car. Suspend the runtime, pauses it, and saves its current execution state. Maybe it was about to suggest calling Bob, so it saves that.
And then?
Then it sees the at conference room. Predicate is now true. It looks up the to call mode for this context, say, call from conference room, and starts executing that one instead.
And if that code accesses contacts list,
it automatically gets the coworker's contacts value, because that's the mode active for the at conference room context.
Seamless switching. And if the user leaves the meeting and gets back in the car later,
context changes back to in-car. The call from conference room mode gets suspended, assuming it was defined that way. The runtime sees in-car is true again. If call from car was set to resume,
it loads the safe state.
Exactly. It restores the state it saved earlier, remembering he was about to suggest calling Bob, and continues the call from car execution right from that point, using the business contacts list again.
That is the core power, isn't it? The developer defines the what for each context, and Flute handles the how of switching, pausing, resuming, and managing state.
Precisely. They don't write the context checks, the state-saving code, the dispatching logic. It's built into the language semantics. The examples in the paper show how modes often call the modal itself recursively.
Why recursively?
Because calling the modal essentially means runtime. Figure out the right mode for the current context and run it. So as the task progresses and context potentially changes, the recursive call naturally lets the runtime reevaluate and switch behavior if needed.
which is worlds away from that manual CULTAC approach where you'd be drowning in boilerplate code just trying to anticipate context changes.
Absolutely. Flute aims to make building these highly adaptive systems significantly more manageable by handling the inherent complexity at the language level.
Okay, let's wrap this up. We started with this vision, right? Reactive context-aware apps driven by sensors everywhere.
But we saw that traditional software tools just weren't cut out for that level of dynamism and interruptibility.
We pinpointed the tough software engineering challenges, managing context, ensuring executions stay valid, adapting instantly, handling state across interruptions, keeping shared state consistent.
Which led to those six key programming language requirements that existing approaches struggled to meet without making the developer's life incredibly difficult.
And then we dug into the proposed solution. The iCode model, a blueprint for a language runtime to automate all that complexity.
We saw how iSchema provided an experimental platform dynamic scheme on iOS, native integration, distribution tools, and how Flute, built on iSchema, brought iCode to life using modals and modes.
Yeah, Flute's big contribution seems to be that language-level support for automatic interruptions, resumptions, reactive dispatch, and those clever scope state strategies like isolated visibility.
All aimed at making it feasible for developers to actually build these sophisticated, adaptive, distributed mobile applications.
So stepping back, what's the relevance of this for you listening? Why does this research matter for the future?
Well, this kind of thinking is really fundamental if we want those truly seamless, intelligent experiences from our devices, right? Mm. Where technology anticipates our needs and adapts proactively based on our context, where we are, what we're doing.
Without us constantly having to tell it what to do.
Exactly. Building those experiences reliably needs programming languages designed for this dynamic, interruptible world. It shows that software tools, especially languages, have to evolve just as radically as the hardware does.
In a world where computing is less about dedicated sessions at a screen and more woven into the environment, sensing and reacting, maybe the languages need to be woven in that way too.
That's a great way to put it. The languages themselves need to become more context aware, more adaptable.
This has been a really fascinating deep dive into programming language design for a future that feels closer than ever. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. It's really stimulating stuff.
And here's a final thought to leave you with. If our applications need to be so aware of context, so ready to be interrupted and adapt, could it be that the most effective programming languages of the future will be those that are, themselves, inherently designed to be context-aware and interruptible, mirroring the very systems they create?
Mm. That's a deep question about the future of programming itself. Definitely something to mull over.
Until the next time, this has been The Deep Dive.